You're listening to Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Guest this hour is Christy Glossa, and she is the CEO of Home Rule, and her website is homerule.net/child-care. Christy, are you with me? Don't have her. Okay, why don't we just open the phone line, so let's take some calls about narcissistic behaviors or anything else that you would like to talk about. I'm not sure what why Christy is not picking up, because we arranged this interview 3 weeks ago. Anyway, so let's just open the phone lines at 800-313-9443. Oh, okay. Never mind. Don't call in. Okay, Christy, are you with us?
Yes.
Bless your heart. I was just opening the phone lines. I thought, whoops, she must have forgotten. Anyway.
I'm so sorry. My phone didn't even ring. I have no idea why.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe you have the ringer off or something. I'm not sure, but I'm glad that you're here. And your website, I was telling the listeners, is homerule.net/child-care. So tell us what you're doing, why you're doing it, and how you got started, and just give us the whole skinny on it.
Oh, wow. Well, we started as a skilled nursing company because I've got 7 kids, and one of them is almost 12, and she has a trach and a G-tube, and she's got chronic lung disease and is medically fragile.
Oh.
So, yeah, so she requires nursing care, and so we've spent almost 12 years from the family side receiving services and, yeah, having nurses in our home. And families like ours have a tendency to struggle often with agencies, and it's probably mostly because they're big companies and they don't really know firsthand what it's like to experience having a medically fragile child in your home. And so we decided to start our own agency because when you have a medically fragile child who needs a nurse, you typically can't go to work without a nurse or sleep without a nurse or even take a shower or cook supper. And so families often lose their jobs or can't get raises because they're always reliant on that nurse, and it's pretty inconsistent. So we decided to start that, and then so we've been, you know, providing nurses for a couple of years. And then I needed a nanny, and I went all the typical traditional routes, and it's hard to find a good babysitter. And this was back in, well, last year. And I gave up, and my husband and I continued juggling our children. And then in January, I just needed to have a babysitter, you know, full-time. And I found out that if you pay a babysitter full-time, then you have to be a household employer, which I kind of knew, but I didn't know that it was really law and required by the IRS. And so I went to my accountant, and I said, I need to become a household employer. And so he charged me money to set that up, and then he had to set me up on payroll, and then I couldn't figure out how to get workers' comp as a household employer, but it's required, and it was just kind of crazy. And I thought, why am I doing this? If this is so hard for me, it has to be that hard for everybody, you know, who's needing child care. And so we decided at that point, because we already are doing all of this, we're just servicing medically fragile children, so why not open it up for child care? And so we got a, you know, it took us a few months to get everything in order and launched it in June. So, of course, in January, we hadn't heard of COVID-19. And then by the time we launched, people were hearing about schools maybe not opening, maybe opening on rotating schedules. And all of a sudden, parents who were relying on daycare centers or schools for their children during the day were wondering if they're going to be able to go to work. And so our world is in a really challenging place for parents right now, because there are a lot of parents who are having to opt out of working or decreasing their hours. And then, of course, there's a lot of companies who have parents at home who are trying to school their children while they're working full time. Opened with a different model, and we actually hire our child caregivers, and we pay their workers' comp and their taxes. We have plenty of professional liability insurance. I feel like that's really important. Like, if I have a babysitter coming into my house, you know, what if she tripped and fell? I don't know. You know, what if she damaged something? Most parents just don't have insurance on their babysitters. And then we train them, and we create a service plan with the parents so that the parents know that their kids are working on really great things during the day and they don't have a babysitter just sitting there on their phone all day ignoring their children. So it kind of helps take away the mom guilt, which is a real thing. And we just love what we do. We feel like it's a really important job. You know, taking care of kids is, you know, teachers, child care workers, it's just nurses, you know, it's just an incredibly important job.
Wow. I've had some wonderful conversations with your husband in the past and didn't realize that you had a child that had such illness, such
yeah,
physical problems. I'm so sorry.
Well, thank you. I mean, it's been a huge challenge in our life. But, you know, sometimes with troubles come a lot of blessings. And,
right.
You know, and so, I mean, we've gone through a lot of hardship. I mean, I can't count the number of times that someone in my house screamed, "Mercy's not breathing," and the whole house kicks into gear and somebody calls 911 and somebody hooks up her oxygen. And, you know, I mean, thankfully she's a lot more stable now than she once was, and that hasn't happened in like 3 years. But,
wow.
You know, we swear that we have PTSD. I mean, we hear doors slam and we're like,
oh, you probably do.
Yeah, yeah. And financially, I mean, ups and downs due to hospitalizations and, yeah, I mean, it's a big deal, but always wondering, you know, if she gets a common cold, is she going to end up on a ventilator in the hospital? I mean, it's a life that only people who live it probably can grasp the scope of, you know, of what's involved.
How old is Mercy?
She will be 12 in September, and she's actually doing phenomenal. She really is just, some of her doctors, like from Duke, when they saw her maybe like 3 years ago, a couple of them literally teared up in the hallway because they had no idea when she was a baby that she would grow up and be so healthy. I mean, if you look, people would look at her, you know, and she's got a trach and she's got all this, you know, gear. But for her and her condition, I mean, she's walking, she's talking. She learned to read last year. You know, who would have known? And, you know, she's different. She's not her, you know, her physical age is not reflective of her, you know, her mental age, but she's her own unique person. And she hasn't been hospitalized in 3 years, so go Mercy.
Well, I had no idea that your husband didn't mention her.
It's amazing that he didn't, because it's every day and every night of our life. You know, if we don't have a nurse at night, since you know him, I should brag on him. He is like the best dad ever. I know so many families.
I,
yeah.
I, I know that you're a very faithful family, that you're just, you're very close knit. But I just didn't realize that you had that challenge. But maybe it's an opportunity. I know it sounds strange to say that, but maybe it brought something out in each of the people in your family, each member of the family, including Mercy, that that you needed to learn in your lifetime, or needed to have that experience. But certainly it has probably undoubtedly increased your empathy for other people.
Definitely. And I used to probably talk about it more often, my adult kids, because, you know, we've got 7 kids, well, including Gary's 2, we've got 9. So, you know, we've got a lot of kids, and they were raised caring for Mercy. So, you know, they saw the hardships. They helped my 26-year-old, who, you know, was like 14, 15, 16, 17, when Mercy was so medically fragile. And she was always the first one out of bed at, you know, 4:30 in the morning. You know, the nurse would yell, you know, something. And we would all come running, and she would be just sitting there right in her, you know, in her face, and tapping her and putting her oxygen on her and saying, "Mercy, don't go to sleep," you know, trying to keep her from passing out. And they're incredible. Sure. But I think that people are inherently selfish. And I think that an interesting story actually is that, and I probably haven't said it in a while, but I think that we kind of lived in a bubble. I mean, we homeschooled our kids, went to church and lived our lives, and, you know, just straight middle class, and we worked a lot and spent a lot of time with our kids. And I remember at one point before she was born thinking, I just feel like I'm living in a bubble. Like, I'm not seeing the real needs. And I was thinking, what should I do? Should I make dinner for my neighbors? You know, find people in need? I mean, what should I do? I just had not been super involved in, you know, any kind of outreach or anything like that. And there was a song that was popular that year. I think it might have been 2007, 2008. And I wish I could remember the singer's name, but I think it's called "Give Me Your Eyes," and it's talking about, you know, give me God's eyes so that I can see the needs that are around me. And that was my favorite song at the time that she was born. And we spent 4 months, the first 4 months of her life, living at the hospital, the hotel across the street, the Ronald McDonald House. We left our other kids with relatives and friends literally for 4 months to help keep her alive. And while we were there living in the NICU and the PICU, all there are needs. There's nothing but needs there. There are children that are dying. There are kids with cancer. There, you know, and you look around and everyone in the waiting room and everybody that you pass, their parents that just got good news or bad news. There's a room where parents would sit and hold their children when they took them off of life support, and you'd watch them walk in. I mean, that is the life in the medically fragile areas of the hospital. And there I was in the middle of that. And that just, it just brought us to a totally different realm of understanding life and death and needs, and that everybody's life isn't peachy and rosy all the time. And then my other kids, you know, I feel like my adult kids are so in tune with people's needs in their lives. And I don't know that they would have gotten that from me prior to Mercy being born. I think that they got it because they themselves saw suffering. You know, you see a child suffer, a child who can't breathe, and when it's your own sister, I think it changes you when you're a child and having to serve and having mom not be able to go to ball games and band concerts and drive you here and there. You know, your life is just very different. I don't wish it on anyone, but the good that can come out of suffering and serving is something that you really can't get any other way. So, and, you know, we wouldn't be serving other families with childcare or with nursing if this weren't happening. I would never wish this on Mercy, ever. If I could go back and she could be a perfectly healthy child and never have to suffer, I would do that. But I can't deny the, you know, who we have all become.
Right.
And who we can serve in a way that we couldn't serve. So.
Right. Yeah, this is... your story is amazing. And as you said, because of your experiences, and now with this COVID issue, there are needs because there are parents who are having to work from home, and yet they have children, or the child is out of school, and the parents still can go to work, but okay, what about the children? What do you do with the children who should be in school, but they're not? So how
does that And there
work?
Are thousands and thousands of moms and parents in that situation right now.
Oh, goodness. And so what kind of services do you offer? How can people partake of the services that you offer? And how do you do it across throughout the country?
So our nursing services are only in North Carolina, but we provide childcare services nationwide. And we designed the childcare division really just as a replica of the nursing division, except with childcare. So we actually hire for each family, and we don't have like a placement fee or anything like that. We charge an hourly rate, and we hire. We usually screen about 60 child caregivers per family, and then we interview a lot of them, and then we bring the top two or three to the family to meet them first by Zoom and then in person, and then the family picks. They're never billed until after the child caregiver comes, and then it's just the hourly wage, and, you know, we just consider ourselves matchmakers, really. And then, of course, we help with the service plan so that they have something to follow during the day. They write down their daily notes so the family knows what they did. And you can find us at homerule.net, HOMERULE.net, and I personally answer anybody who writes in or calls us, and we love to help.
Well, that is just amazing, and I can see that you've taken your experiences and now you're using those experiences, as difficult as they have been, to help other people. That what a remarkable couple you are. you and Jerry. It is just amazing. Because there are some people that would not have survived what you have and come out with the attitude that you have, that you're going to take what you have experienced with your daughter, with Mercy, and apply it across the board to assist other people.
Mm-hmm. I've met families that are angry and they stay angry. It's really challenging. But, you know, in this world that we live in, you know, we come across a lot of families that have suffered hardship. And some of them, my daughter's CAPC case manager. She became a case manager because she had a son who had a genetic disorder, and he was provided with services. and he passed away, and she wanted to provide the same services. So I meet amazing people all the time who turn their woes. And
Christy, we do have to cut to a quick 3-minute break. Thank you. We'll be right back.
It starts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we take the lead to change the bad to good, to live in harmony. It starts with you and me.
All right, we are back. And our guest this hour is Christy McLaughlin. And I wanted that song, the bump-in music, to play because that's kind of what you've done, changing the bad to good. And it's just remarkable. I'm so impressed and inspired by what you've done. And just, it's just an amazing thing.
Wow. Well, I'm grateful that you are. You know how we all feel very, very human. And sometimes you have that day or moment where you're like strong and I've got this, I can do this. But a lot of the time you feel like you're just muddling through like everybody else.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. I think we all have those days where we wish that they were shorter or... we all have those days.
Right, or you could actually accomplish what you need to accomplish.
Right. Sometimes you get up and you think, and then it's time to go to bed and you think, oh, what did I get done today? Nothing. You managed to get dressed and I do have certain things that I do every morning before I leave my bedroom. I'm learning how to be a energy practitioner, energy medicine practitioner.
Oh, wow.
And so it's really, I really love it. And before I leave my room, my bedroom, I do my energy routine every morning, trace my meridians, do all of those things. I make my bed. I would never leave my room without making my bed. I jump in the shower, and at the end of a warm shower, I turn it on cold, which I know it's coming, but it's always a shock when it gets there. And but it just kind of wakes you up, and so that's my routine before I ever leave. So at least I've gotten that down. Okay,
right.
I've done
right.
that. But it gets me started in the direction that I want to go.
No.
So if you start your morning off with accomplishments, I think you can
right.
carry that over through the rest of the day.
Right, hopefully. Right. That's so true. Last week I actually really struggled because I was actually staying up watching the, what was it called? The, convention.
Oh, right.
And,
those things.
And I never stay up that late, and I was working while I was doing it, but I finally had started within the last couple of months, probably been longer than that now, but as we were starting to launch the childcare division, I just said, you know, I can't get this all done unless I get that great morning routine, and oh my goodness. So I started bookending my days and my evenings. I would get my clothes ready and I would take a shower and I would, you know, have everything prepared. My daughter is actually standing on the other side of the door holding up her tube feed. That's right. Go give it to Daddy, okay? Thank you. She's holding a pitcher and her tube that goes into her G-tube and she's trying to measure it. So her daddy is watching a movie with all of the kids right now.
Oh.
So anyway, yeah, so then I decided that unless I get up at 5:30 and just get dressed really fast and get out the door and, like, start working at 6:15 in the morning at the office, I can't get everything done that I need. So people will ask me, how do you get so much done? And I'll say, I just do it all before everybody starts talking to me in the morning. So... Mm-hmm. We were able to work out that routine you know, and then Jerry gets up and handles the children in the morning, and then he goes to work. So, yeah, I do all my work in the 2.5 or 3 hours before everybody else starts calling me and emailing. And yes, there's definitely something to the pattern and the routine, but I think I might need to try the cold shower thing.
Oh, it's really, it just wakes you up. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Well, I'm not the person that wakes up in the morning and says, oh, yes, another day, and hops out of bed. I was once upon a time, but, you know, there's just a lot to do right now. In fact, I was just sitting down, you know, I came up with a different plan for, we just took on several clients in a particular town, actually nursing clients, and one of them is an infant with a trach and a ventilator, and it was a last-minute call from a hospital, and they need staffing, like, later this coming week, and I said, that is really short notice. What happened? And long story short, I have to hire nurses for Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Well, no, it's actually Burlington, like, immediately, and so that's, you know, I've just been working on that pretty much all day. And we have another client in that area that needs a nurse Monday because her former nurse up and quit, and bad news. But these are all medically fragile children, and so I feel for the families. Yeah, I mean, I hate having clients unstaffed. I hate having clients unstaffed. It just, you know, so I will just try to come up with all kinds of creative ideas to get the nurses' attention so that we can hire them and put them in homes.
Now, have you had any instances where you've had elderly patients who needed nurses because of COVID? Has COVID been an issue with your helping to provide nurses?
Well, it's definitely been an issue. There's no doubt about that. We have not had elderly patients with COVID, but the majority of our patients are pediatric and then some young adults. But they're all medically fragile, and I want to say most of them have lung issues. You know, chronic lung disease or cystic fibrosis or, you know, like things that are really serious lung conditions. So everyone is concerned. I mean, as soon as we heard about COVID, all the parents were calling us and we were calling them, and everybody was coming up with a plan, like, what are we going to do to protect our kids, meaning all of our patients and their families. And so, you know, we had to come up with a plan. And so we, like we have N95 masks in the home. We give our nurses the choice of what kind of mask they want to wear. But they all are required to wear masks, obviously extra hand washing. Everyone is just really conscientious and being extra careful about, for example, not going into crowds. And, you know, one of my daughter's nurses flew a couple of months ago. And when I found out that her method of travel was flying, and we don't staff my own daughter, another agency does due to conflict of interest with insurance. And, I just called the agency and said, I need for her to sit out for 8 days. I mean, I could have said any number of days, but I guess I just kind of figured that might be long enough to find out whether she was exposed to anything on her travels, you know, but it's really scary. And, you know, we have, for example, one of our child care clients has a medically fragile adult in the home, one of the parents. And so all of our clients, not just our nursing clients, but all of them have called us because they want to be careful, because some of them have chosen not to put their kids back in school. They've had the option of putting their kids back in, at least on it, like 3 days a week or something. And they just said, it's just not worth it to us. You know, we're willing to sacrifice on other ends, maybe meaning earning less money, having to take a different job working from home. But boy, COVID has really done, ooh, boy. Yeah, and another way that it's really affected us is, like, a lot of families who may have had, like, 4, 5, or 6 nurses who rotated through their home mm-hmm. because they have a lot of hours, they narrowed it down to 3. And so those 3 nurses are really working hard and working a lot of hours, which obviously as a small company affects us because we're paying a lot of overtime. But we're obviously more than willing to staff our clients under, you know, the safest circumstances possible. So it is just, you know, boy, it's affected people. And when one of our nurses gets a fever or our child caregivers, if they get a fever or they're symptomatic, they either have to sit out for 14 days and quarantine themselves or go get tested and still quarantine themselves until they get a test. And so far, none of our staff has ever tested positive, but that really makes it hard on the family and it makes it hard on the other caregivers who have to fill in. I mean, it probably doesn't matter what industry you're in. COVID, you know, one of our parents, one of our kids' parents, trached ventilated child, the parent was exposed at work, and we had to tell our nurses, and the nurses were worried. So then the parent had to quarantine themselves within the home. I mean, it's just wow is all I can say.
there's a 99% rate of the rate of deaths or actual harm from COVID is much, much, much less than it is from flu.
Right. I know. And, you know, the interesting thing is people are all walking around in masks, and I'm like, you know what? First of all, I am very conservative. But secondly, and so I love our freedom, but, you know, I'm with all the other families saying, welcome to the world of having a medically fragile child. Because that's how we are all the time. My child can require a ventilator when she gets a common cold. You
okay,
have a common cold, you walk by her, she breathes your germs, and we spend 6 weeks on a ventilator, on a lot of medication, just keeping her alive from the common cold. But on the other hand, I should not talk politics at all, I'm sure, being a business owner, but I don't for one second think that businesses should have been shut down. I am a fortunate person who owns a healthcare company. I mean, people would call me and they're like, how are you? I said, thankful to have a job. I am thankful to be able to pay my bills. I think it is just not the American way to be shutting down businesses. I hate it for all of the people who are, suffering. They are suffering right now.
They've lost their homes, lost mm-mm. their jobs. They're being evicted. There's domestic abuse is up.
Suicide is up. You know, here, I should not be doing this. I can imagine people from my company coming back saying, why are you speaking publicly on politics? But I will tell you what. I have a medically fragile daughter. I have a daughter who could potentially not survive. She's in that group of people. In fact, we had a pulmonology visit yesterday, and he said, all of my patients, he's from UNC, Children's Hospital, he said to me, all of my patients fall in this category. He said, but you know what? We're not going to be afraid. He said, for children, that even my daughter's pulmonologist, who only works with medically fragile children, He said, all of my children are in the demographic who would probably handle it worse than others. And I said, well, what are you going to do? Are you going to give her hydrochloric? He goes, no. And I was like, well, what are you going to do? He said, well, we'll treat it like anything else. And, you know, if she needs to come into the hospital, she'll come in. But he wasn't panicked at all. Over this, he sees it all the time in the hospital. He was talking about all the COVID cases, and he was not panicked. So I'll just say this, and I'm only me. I'm not every other parent of a medically fragile child. I am my parents are in their 70s. My husband is 66. You know, so this doesn't affect me. But here's the deal. I have spent the last 12 years protecting my daughter. That's my job. My job isn't to limit everyone else's freedom so that my child is protected. I will say that I wish that people just over forever would not go out sick. I don't think they should go to school sick. I don't think they should go to church sick.
No,
I don't think they should shop in Walmart sick. That's always been my pet peeve. You know, my family could go out more if you all would just stay home if you're sick. Mm-hmm. But there's no reason for well people, and I know full well I have a medically fragile child, so I know that people don't always know that they're sick. We've had nurses mm-hmm. come in and work a whole night and go home and ending up with bronchitis and have to call and say, I think I exposed her, but I didn't know it. And we're like, you know, stuff happens, and we're going to deal with this. But mm-hmm. I don't believe in freedoms being taken away. I totally am for capitalism. I mean, I have benefited. I worked, you know, my husband, I'll just say this. I'm just laying it out for you. In 2017, between the late 2016 and October of 2017, all within a year, my daughter had four major surgeries, all that were necessary. Three were emergencies. And then she began aspirating, and she was in and out of the PICU at UNC through August, every one of my kids' birthdays, every single holiday, Mother's Day, Father's Day, we were in the hospital. Sometimes with her barely breathing. On Mother's Day of 2017, it was the first time since she was an infant that I was concerned that she wasn't going to make it through. It was so hard. So our businesses suffered. I couldn't work. My husband was working at half pace, watching the rest of the kids at home because I always stay in the hospital. And in April of 2018, we decided to sell the house that we had raised all of our kids in. And the reason was financial. It was financial. I'm not going to lie. Because families like ours struggle and suffer. So we sold our house. We took the money. We paid off most of our debts. We put it into this company, and we moved near the mountains because we haven't had a vacation in over 12 years. So we took our youngest three kids, or three of our oldest were getting married that year, and so we kind of, you know, left them in Raleigh. We moved 3 hours west so that we could give our younger kids some experiences. In any case, my husband's business, with just more freedom and less stress, I guess, picked up, and over the course of time, he put over $200,000, all of his money. He just handed it to me all the time. Here it is, here it is, here it is. And, you know, the sale of our house, and put it into starting this company. That's capitalism, and I will fight for that. I will fight for the right to take my money, put it where I want, and choose to grow a company. We sacrifice all the time. I just started taking a salary. I worked for free for 2 years. I just finally put myself on salary. And taking away freedoms like that,
Right.
It's so un-American.
It is. And even the mandatory mask wearing, you're breathing in your own carbon dioxide.
Mm-hmm.
Which mm-hmm. is very, very unhealthy. I don't wear a mask. I have a little sign that says I don't have to.
Right. Yeah, I think it's people's choice. I mean, I'm the kind of person, because of my daughter, that during cold and flu season, if I'm going out to the grocery store or whatever, I do put on a mask. Because my daughter can die from the common cold. So I'm mm-hmm. going to wear an N99 with a HEPA filter.
Right.
But that's me. See, that's the freedom. I choose to do it. You don't? Great.
But you have a special needs child that mm-hmm. you have to protect. And mm-hmm. for the common person, you know, I had somebody that did a service call for my furnace and had it cleaned and everything, and mm-hmm. furnace and air conditioner. And he said he got hypo... What did he get? He
was working on the wrong furnace. He couldn't breathe. He got hot. What did they call that?
Hypoxia?
Yeah, that. Say it.
Hypoxia.
Yeah, that hypoxia.
I'm not a medical professional. I should say that. I might own a healthcare company, but I'm a mom and a business owner with a teaching degree. that's
right.
Me. I can't say enough about how I see us losing our freedoms, and it's devastating.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Hey, do you know what my husband and I are doing right now? I wouldn't talk so much about my husband if you didn't know him, but he's such a great guy.
Yes.
He's really funny. He's a publicist, and he dreams publicity. People might call us crazy. I don't know. Unusual, unorthodox maybe. I don't know. But he woke up last Sunday morning, and he'll do this. He'll wake up at, I don't know, 4:30, 5 in the morning, 3:30, anytime. He woke up and he went to the kitchen table and he scribbled down on a paper towel, online convention. And so, like, literally he has so many ideas that, like, 89 out of 90 times, I'm like, Jerry, that's a diversion. Like, we can't do that. You know, we're not going to do that. That is totally a diversion or, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. But we actually decided that very day, did some research, bought the platform, and I think on Wednesday, it's launching Wednesday, September 2nd, we're actually going to host a massive conference on freedoms. It's called 20 Days to Save the USA. And it's not set up yet, but when it is on September 2nd, it will be at specialguest.com. And you will be able to see the first speakers. I don't know how many he already has lined up. No, I don't think anybody's turned him down. Because we are talking about our freedoms.
Right.
And how, am I allowed to talk politics on here?
Of course. Oh no, we never talk politics. Of course you can talk politics.
How if Biden is elected, the world as we know it will never be again. And that's why we are hosting this. So literally for 20 days, from October 15th through November 3rd, we are having speakers and speakers and speakers. And it's a full conference with networking and exhibitors and sponsors. And I am so sorry. I'm talking too much. It's going to be a great place to meet up and obviously to bring people who are on the fence and who need to be shown in a clear way that they're losing the very freedoms that they take for granted.
Mm-hmm. I don't like either party, actually. We've lost
right.
our freedoms. People say, oh, what a great president Trump is. I'm thinking, well, wait a minute. All this stuff happened under his watch. So
right.
I just don't know. It's just a mess. I know there are people who
right.
who love both of them. I can't imagine Biden can't even carry on a conversation with on a news program. He's
right.
too old. He obviously has some cognitive issues. Why are they running him?
It's shocking. It's shocking that it's not discussed more.
Unless they're planning on...
it's so obvious.
Exactly. What mm-hmm. what are they thinking? Or are they thinking...
oh, I think that they're thinking. I'm sure that they have a plan. Whatever their plan is, it's a plan. It's certainly not by accident.
Oh, absolutely.
And, you know, here's
not.
The interesting thing. I hate politics. When I met my husband, you know, he books guests on talk shows. And
I know. He's booked some
right,
on the
right, that's what he does.
What he
and
does.
I met him and I said, I don't watch talk shows. I said, I hate politics. They just sit and bicker and they argue and I don't enjoy it. And when we decided to do this conference and talking about our freedoms, when he said it, he said, I can't believe that you're going to do this. And I said, I can't sit around and watch my kids grow up in a socialist country. I can't watch our taxes go up to 85% or whatever. I mean, I just can't see America become not America. And maybe everybody doesn't feel that way. I know that they don't, but, and everybody's vantage point is different. But at this point, you know, I might not be a Trump fan, and yes, he is definitely this has happened on his watch, but I also believe that people's hands are tied to a degree. But I will stand for freedom.
Mm-hmm.
And I just couldn't sit back and, you know, so we've got like Second Amendment people and pro-life people and
exactly.
I don't know, like all kinds
yes.
of, you know, freedom fighters, patriots who are going to be talking. Because
wonderful.
A lot of people, yeah, a lot of people don't know the facts. And I was talking with somebody recently who, just really liberal, sweet person, love her to pieces. You know, and she said, well, you know, people need to know why they believe what they believe. And, you know, all these people talking about freedom and about this and that. And, you know, she seems to, I guess, think that people don't actually do their research or know their history or, you know, whatever. And, you know, and I looked and I thought, I don't think that she knows her facts.
Right.
She's like a bleeding heart, you know, to tear the wall down, let everybody in, let's pay taxes for everybody and, woohoo! Let's, you know, but they, a lot of people literally, they've always been a Democrat. They've always, you know, I have people very, very close in my life and they're like, Democrat all the way, always have been. And I'm like, do you guys pay attention to issues? Like, it's not Republican or Democrat anymore. It totally isn't. It's,
right.
You have to know the issues. You have
right.
to know the issues.
Well, I'm glad that you're doing this. I think it's fabulous that you're doing it. In fact, that's how I met your husband, is via his publicist
yeah.
Job.
Yeah.
Because I get emails from him.
Sure. You probably get a lot, I imagine.
And yeah. And so we've had some very nice conversations.
That's great.
But yeah, there's a lot of things going on that we need to ask, and certainly the gun issue. And I can understand how some people feel about guns. We are going to take a short 3-minute break. We'll be right back. Back with our guest, Christy McLaughlin, and you were telling us about this conference and about, talking about gun rights and that kind of thing, and I totally believe in gun rights, and I think that, there are people, and I understand their reasoning, people who have lost others in school shootings and whatnot, they want to take guns away. But that, if there had been if the custodian or the security guard or whomever
mm-hmm.
had a gun, there wouldn't have been shootings. I really believe that the
right.
Second Amendment helps us with the First Amendment, and I believe in the Bill of Rights. Period. I don't believe in gun control.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. That's the American way. It's the way it's always been. And you're right. I mean, as soon as the government starts taking away our guns, then they have
it's
control.
It's going to be even worse. Oh, absolutely.
Right.
In fact, I live in the Chicago suburbs. They have the toughest gun laws in the country, and they have the most violent city.
Right.
They're in the top 10 of the most violent cities in the country.
Mm-hmm. That is the
sure.
truth. Well, I live in the South. People here have rifles and pistols, and you can virtually always, no matter where you are outside, you can hear people shooting, like the shooting range, or they're doing target practice,
mm-hmm.
or they're hunting, and it's just a normal thing. And I remember actually going with my husband to meet Larry Pratt one time from Gun Owners of America. We were in a restaurant, and he got there first, and he went and sat down, and he was back at the back of the restaurant in a corner facing out, and he looked at us, and he said, "Of course I have my gun." He said, "Of course I've got my gun," and he said, "I sit here on purpose," because he can see. It's just what he does. He can see the whole restaurant. And, you know, I've already recorded Stephen Williford's speech for 20 Days to Save the USA. And, yeah, he was the guy who ran down the gunner, chased mm-hmm. him down barefooted, and then hopped in somebody's car of a church shooting.
Right.
And eventually the police got there. And he assisted the police.
Right.
But,
Stephen. And he told the whole story. And
fantastic
Thank goodness he had the gun and courage, for goodness sake. Or else
courage.
People would have lost their lives. Yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
Fabulous
story.
Yeah. Wow. Well, we started out talking about home rule, and here we are talking about gun rights.
Well, it kind of blends in together. You're talking about
it does, because it's the world we live in, isn't it?
Yes, and so you're doing this wonderful service, taking care of people. I think you must be an earth as far as your rhythm. Everybody has a rhythm, their rhythm that they live by.
Wonderful.
So I think you're Mother Earth. Aww. Bless your heart. Thank you so much for being on the program.
Well, thank you.
Take care.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Bye-bye. Tell Jerry I said
bye-bye.
Bye.